So,
man of the people.
It sucked. It's getting 0 stars. All right. So, Relics was a really great episode. Actually, I would say it was one of the better episodes of Next Generation.
I don't know why it's called Man of the People.
We don't have to talk about this, Eric.
No, I want to talk about
it. No, we don't have to talk about this. It's our show. We can move on.
I don't want to move on. I want to talk about Man of the People because I think that it is not that bad.
Oh, well, it's the worst. It's probably, this is among one of my least favorite episodes. Like, I hated this just so much.
I only vaguely remembered which episode this was. Ugh. And I watched it, you know, of course. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, right. This episode. I remember this now. And it's Troy and she's getting old and blah, blah, blah. Everyone says it's awful.
It is.
I honestly don't think it's that bad.
Okay.
It's not great, certainly, but, and I don't think it's underrated or anything, but it's a good bad episode. And what I mean by that is it's insanely entertaining. I'm sorry.
What?
I
mean, it is and it isn't.
You get to see Marina Sirtis act like Anne Bancroft and then act like
I was getting like a Vampira like vibe from that dress.
That's
for some
fine.
Reason.
That works too. It's insanely sexist, but I think that it's entertaining, and I think that it's not a bad episode.
Okay, well, that's your right as an American.
You know, it's just the interesting thing about the episode is that so.
I mean, this was the shitty Picture of Dorian Gray episode, right?
Well,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, but, like, in a way that makes even less sense, and, like, it's just...
Well, so they were supposed to film Relics, right? And they had to push it a week.
Okay.
Because of James Doohan's schedule.
Sure.
So they didn't really have an episode ready. So they had to, this is a charming term, had to gangbang the episode.
Okay, that gave them the premise of the...
Yeah, which means that one writer wrote, like, each act. And so, like, 5 people worked on this episode. And the guy that got credited for it kind of put the whole thing
together.
Was
the one who had the short straw at the end.
Well, no, because it's, like, Writers Guild rules. And something weird like that. But you know, so it's kind of... I think that's one of the reasons why it feels kind of weird. But, you know, I just... It's the setup is sort of standard TNG stuff. All of the scenes are sort of standard TNG stuff. I think that the A and the B plot are fine. It's all just kind of a fine episode. And what I really want to talk about Man of the People with is this weird thing it has about being like one of the worst episodes of the Next Generation. And I'm just not seeing it.
I mean, it's just,
you need to convince me of this.
I mean, I can't say it's like I see where you're going with it. I mean, in a way, there is a lot of camp entertainment to that. When she comes in that weird blue dress, you know, with her hair like that, and she's, you know, intent forward and having that freak out. I mean, you get to see Marina Sirtis do some weird stuff that she never gets to do.
Yeah.
And okay. You know, and I could see that thing, but I don't know. I guess a lot of it is I'm starting to see season 6, and I guess this is when it's cementing in that the days are over. You know what I mean? Like, that this is... Season 3, season 4 never would have dared to have an episode that's like this. That's this bad, in a way. When the show was... I don't know. This episode, in a way, is an indicator that the show is passing its prime, I feel. Because the past few... So far, I haven't enjoyed season 6. Relics will turn out to be the first season 6 episode I like, and I think they knocked it out of the park, but... Season 6 hasn't been good.
Well, I think that's true. And I think that the show is definitely on a decline now. I mean, you know, and this happens to shows. I mean, it's been...
Oh, of course. And I expected this to happen.
The show has done, like, I don't know. What if we talked about, like, 100 episodes of the show or something? I mean, there's a lot of TV it's done already. And this, so there are diminishing returns. I mean, a lot of the writers are still the same. And so, you know, the ideas are starting to peter out a little bit.
At the same time, this is the third bad episode in a row. And... it's the worst of those 3 so far. So, I mean, it's hitting me harder.
Well, that could be. I mean, I don't think that Realm of Fear was that bad, number one. And I don't remember you thinking it was that bad. I mean, I think we had a fine conversation about it, and I think it was a decent episode. I don't think it was not like terrible. So Man of the People for me is, I guess I like a lot of it is that I like Troy and I like Marina Sirtis and I like when they give her stuff to do. Like, they don't give her great stuff to do. They never really give her great stuff to do. Although I will say that there is an episode in the sixth season that's coming up that is probably Troy's best episode. And it's actually a really good episode.
That's one of the ones I've seen. If it's the one I think you're talking
about.
That's
disappointing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you need to stop watching. You need to go back in time and tell yourself not to watch any Star Trek The Next Generation so that when you do this podcast, you will be fresh and you'll say, what the hell is a podcast? Because it's 1989. So what I think about this episode is that I like to see Marina Sirtis get to do interesting stuff, you know, and yeah, the episode, like I said, it tends to be sexist. You know, the stuff that Troy gets to do tends to be sexist, and that is a problem. And I'm not pretending that it's a problem. You know, she gets every single plot that she's had, I think so far revolves around her vagina. And
on the Netflix description, it says, you know, Troy finds herself interested. And I'm like, of course she finds him interesting. You know, it's her episode and he has a pulse. Like, that's what she does when it's her turn.
But I kind of feel like that's a misnomer, though, because I don't really get a sense that she was all that interested in him before she got the weird rock thing that happened, you know. And so, you know, I think that in that situation, she was just trying to be helpful in a professional capacity.
Yeah, I don't see her as particularly interested in him beyond just she's someone that he's, you know, she has rapport with and she finds, you know, interesting on some levels, but, you know, it seemed platonic from her end.
So. Yeah, definitely it seems platonic. And I think that you know, he obviously is a mustache twirling villain.
Yeah.
But when she starts getting into her vamp mode and she starts getting a little bit older and, you know, It's I like it because I like episodes where it's a little bit off kilter and the characters are a little not sure of what's going on. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of really nice stuff. I think there's a lot of different directions to take this conversation, but I think what I would like to talk about is the stuff in the episode with Troy and Riker, because I think that's something that the show drops in every once in a while, maybe once or twice a season. And I'm finding that, you know, as the show has gotten older, they're allowing themselves to do it a little more and a little more explicitly, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like the relationship that they have. And, you know, I like that Riker is kind of, I don't know. They have a very interesting relationship.
We've talked about that. Like we figured they when they have the opportunity to be romantic, they can do that. But they also know that it's very, again, it's holidays. They have shore leave. You know, one of them goes through a particularly awful situation. You know, like that's, you know, they're dating each other when they have the convenience to, and it's nice and it's warm and it's. But they also know that it's only these things. You know. But that's nice, and I think it works for them.
Yeah, and I also think that what you see in this episode is it's a little bit of a different take on the relationship, because I'm thinking specifically of, you know, the scene when there's this motif in the episode that comes up a couple times where Riker and Troy are supposed to be working on crew evaluations together. Now, why Troy would be involved in that, I don't know. Huh.
Well, because, you know, she needs to say at the end if the crew member is crazy or not.
Yeah,
you know, Riker's all like, he does his job. Yes, but he's insane. He keeps, like, drooling and screaming, and he doesn't, you know, understand anything.
I would watch that. you know, and she's kind of acting like an asshole, frankly. She's acting like an asshole, and Riker's like, I don't want to deal with this. What I like about that is it gets that right. It gets that sort of like when you're in a romantic relationship with someone, there's a certain amount of respect you have to have for the other person, and there's a certain amount of putting up with their shit you have to get. And what I like about that is it realizes that in this relationship, Riker doesn't have to do that, and so Riker's just like, I'm out. You're acting like a jerk. I'm just leaving. Like I don't have to deal with this. I don't know what's wrong with you. See you later.
Yeah, the two of them, their relationship has a lot of very strong boundaries to it. Again, it's only in certain prescribed situations, and this isn't his responsibility. You know, they're not dating. They don't have. Yeah, you're right. They don't have to take each other's crap.
Right, and especially when Riker comes in and her quarters obviously smell like vaginal intercourse. Because hey, that ensign though, I'm telling you, he was.
Hello, Commander Riker. How are you doing? I didn't have sex with a counselor.
I would have had sex with him, but not Troy. And that's the other thing. He's like, it's fine. You do whatever you want to do. I don't have any say in this.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I like that she's, trying to bait him from a jealousy standpoint. And he's as much not really caring about the jealousy as he is about the fact that she's being really irresponsible. Like, that to him is more, I find, in a way, that's more where he's having the problem. From Riker's view, he's figured she's, he may not have been the very first ensign that she had an evening with at some point in her life. She's probably dated people before, and I think he's fine with the fact that she has had dating, but not really have, but now is a time for working and not play, in a way.
Yeah,
that's as much strange to her as the fact that she's being overtly vampy. I mean, neither are in her character, but being irresponsible is really not in her character.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and I think it's why he's so oft-putted by
it.
Because he knows that Troy is a professional.
She would never wear a nightgown to a work.
Right, exactly. Like, he shows up and he's like, where are we going to work? Like, what is going on here? The stuff with Troy and how it develops and how she sort of becomes very, very aggressively sexual. Suddenly is not because she's an old woman. I don't know what the episode is trying to say about that. And I don't know if it's even has a clear idea of what it's trying to say. I mean, because you've got this character, Alcar, I think his name is. He's a mediator or something. And it's standard, generic, there's a guy and he's going to a planet to stop a war kind of nonsense that Star Trek likes to do. And at this point, it's paint by numbers. I think they might just have like a few different bullets.
Spin the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't matter, that he's using other people as receptacles for his bad emotions or something. I don't know. And it's all whatever.
I guess my problem with it is this was so paint by numbers, and we've seen these elements done so much better before. I mean, hell, even the getting old thing was done really funny. If you want to talk about a camp episode where people grow old, then the original series did that.
True.
I guess for me, it's because every beat that this story hit was kind of done better elsewhere.
Oh, no, I think that's true. But I think that there's a certain level of putting up with that.
It's a filler episode.
In a show, when you're doing 26 episodes season and you have 7 seasons of a show,
which we've said many times,
they're going to repeat themselves. But what I think is kind of problematic about it and kind of what I want to explore is this idea that, he's using other empaths as receptacles for his bad emotions. And of course, what happens is once his emotions start feeding into or his psychic energy, I mean, it's all mumbo jumbo, but it doesn't really matter, that she becomes aggressively sexual. And it's sort of like, what is the show trying to say here?
See, I thought they were going to do some, I thought they were doing something really clever with that. Like, because
did you see the first 20 minutes of the episode?
Hear me out, because I thought that obviously when you see there's this old lady, all right, she's being, techno babbled into an old woman. And that's obviously going to be happening to Troy. I thought that, we know that Betazoid women, when they reach middle age, get the space hornies, And I thought that that's where Troy was going. I thought they were saying, she was aging and the first signs were that where she starts getting very, very aggressive. But that's not at all what they were doing. They were just...
No.
Part of that, maybe that felt like a letdown too, because I thought, that's actually kind of clever. Troy is aging. Well, that is going to be one of the first things that happens.
I think that's interesting, and I kind of wish that they had picked up on that, frankly, because I think that would have made the episode, frankly, a little less offensive, I guess.
Yeah, because it would take the continuity into effect, the fact that this is something she is going to go through when she's older, like all of that.
But instead, what we get is an episode which, again, is treating female sexuality at arm's length and from a male perspective, which is just sort of like, this is what women are going to do. And then when she gets older, suddenly she becomes a crazy jealous person.
Yeah.
And I don't get that. I don't get what the show is trying to say. And I don't really think that it's...
Yeah, and why are those,
why are those the two?
The negative. If he's he's going to be feeling negative emotions about this treaty. They're going to be nervousness. They're going to be anxiety, feelings of insecurity, feelings of worry for the people that might get her. You know, all of these things. He is going to – but when it's in her, they get incarnated not as a worry or anxiety or panic attacks, which would make more sense if she was just, again, having symptoms of PTSD. But right. She's just having horniness and jealousy, and that's what – like there's a negativity, and that's how men express it versus how women express it, in a way.
I don't, what do you mean by
like
that?
It seems there's just a general negative emotion that just gets drained from him into her, and that's how she's expressing it. You know, it's not a particular negative emotion, but just when she's feeling down, she's just going to be horny and angry.
I can see that, and I think, you know, I think you're right, and I think that kind of crystallizes my problem with it, is that, you know, if you're talking about sucking out general negative emotions and putting them into someone else, you know, and so you're going to get the generic response back from that, they seem to think that the generic bad response from a woman is that she's going to act, number one, aggressively sexual, and then also jealous and like crazy. I mean, this is a problem, is what I'm saying.
Let's imagine a version of this episode in which, you know, he makes this bond with a man, would the man be suddenly, I mean, I number one, it would be a little too dark for the episode to go for this guy to suddenly be rapey and murdery.
Sure.
But which is its own double standard, and that's, I don't think we want to touch that one. But at the same time, like, I can't see the episode going in that direction. I don't think that's what the episode thinks that, you know what I mean? Like, I think if they had a man, he would be having panic attacks.
And frankly, you know, I to take that a step further, I don't think that the episode, it would ever have him use a man as a receptacle or be comfortable with that, because that would be a level of intimacy between men that the show has never been comfortable expressing.
That's very fair.
You know, and so this episode is, so I guess it's homophobic as well as being sexist. Wow, this is a twofer.
I told you this was an awful episode.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think it is not a great episode, like I've said, but, you know, and certainly I think it has very problematic elements, but what I like about it is just that it is entertaining to watch. I mean, you know, and I just, again, I just don't get why people think it's so bad. I mean, I guess I sort of can see it, but to me, I have a lot of fun watching Marina Sirtis, you know, sort of cheese it up. And while everyone, I think, is taking this deadly seriously in the episode, I can't take it seriously.
And this
is, you know, you always talk about camp. And when we talked about the original series, you talked about camp ad nauseum. And I did not agree with you a lot of the time. And I'm not even someone who enjoys camp necessarily. But I think this episode is one of the rare times that The Next Generation has done camp. And I guess I like it.
And that's fair. You know, I think in terms of the bad parts of this episode, if we were at a list of, you know, negative stuff, if we were to score that, we'd probably get a similar negative score for that. It's just you found some redeeming qualities, again, even if it was cheesy and made you laugh.
Yeah.
That at least mitigate it. Like, this is an awful, stupid, problematic, terrible episode. But, you know, something like it's Friday night and I've had a couple beers and it's funny, like, I didn't get that part from it. So maybe it's as simple as that, you know?
I definitely agree with you, and I think that's true. Well, the other thing I want to talk about is I think the episode mitigates itself a little bit in having Crusher also be a pretty prominent character in the episode.
And I liked what Crusher did this episode. This is Crusher being a good Crusher in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she is the impetus for discovering what he's doing. She is the impetus for curing Troy. She comes up with the plan.
Yeah.
You know, she is the one who is the driving force of the episode in a lot of ways. I mean,
and we finally get to see, in a way, this is almost like we finally get to see the cortical stimulators work.
Yeah.
But this, you know, to a degree seems a mitigation of Yar in a way. Like, you know, we've seen people that, you know, Crusher can't save, but, you know, the fact that she can kill Troy and bring her back, and it's seen a major but not like out, you know, outside of the pale for her, is, I don't know. It's good to see her. They treated Crusher right in this episode, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because, you know, of course, this is a Troy episode, but Troy is very, very passive. You know, Troy doesn't have a lot of agency in this episode, which is another problem.
Usually
with,
in Troy episodes, I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I'm just thinking of the child's the only other one I could think of right this second, but you know, that was very much something that happened to Troy, you know. A lot of the episode of very much stuff that's done too.
Yeah. But I think when Crusher gets an episode, it's a different kind of episode than what Troy would get, because I don't think that the show views Crusher as a sexual being necessarily. Sometimes, of course. I mean, you've got the host, for example, or, you know, when she and Picard flirt while drinking hot tea, which is strange. Because I don't find that to be sexy. I mean, when I drink tea, I don't feel sexy, but you know.
Well, that's because you have to add whiskey.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, it's sort of like a separate side episode, which, you know, has shunted Troy or shunted Crusher off into another. It's almost like another episode entirely. And it's like a good episode because, you know, she gets to solve a mystery. She gets to take agency. She gets to do all these interesting things. And maybe that's just because five people worked on this episode. I don't know. You know?
You're writing the Crusher scenes and that writer happens to really like Crusher. Yeah. I mean, it does a little more naturally fit this Star Trek mode of storytelling to give Crusher something more interesting to do in her own episode, in that she is a doctor. She is very explicitly in the hard sciences, and the show is very fine with giving, you know, little sci-fi mysteries. So
yeah,
hers, while they're not always, you know, tend to be, okay, there's some weird kind of scientific mystery and I've got to use my medical knowledge to figure it out. So she has a very obvious place to apply her skills to that.
I think that's true, but I also think that it's kind of the structure of the episode is maybe not as bad as people make it out to be, because there's really no B story here. I mean, there's a little bit of that stuff on the planet, but that's really not a B story at all. That's just kind of there.
More of a MacGuffin than anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's just there to have the character have a reason to be there.
They're vague about the political situation, and I mean, they gloss. I think that at this point To their credit, maybe they do realize that we've seen this episode so many times that we don't really care or need to know the details. We just need to establish, and they do a fine job of establishing. There's two groups and they hate each other and we're trying to figure it out.
It's not the point of the episode. That, you know, Crusher's mystery is sort of the B story in this. And so the medical science fiction sort of side of this has a lot to do and a lot of connections with Troy's story. And so it's kind of all of a piece, I think, in that way as well.
Hmm.
I'm not saying that it again is a classic episode, but I think it works a lot better than people give it credit for.
Okay, well,
and also I do like that Picard gets another opportunity to huff a lot. I mean, that's just always fun. You know, he hasn't. I mean, Jean-Luc Picard and Patrick Stewart, I think they've sort of. I'm not saying they shunted him off to the side recently, but
I mean,
he hasn't really had a ton to do except maybe in iBorg, and even then.
Picard really hasn't much to do. Riker hasn't really had that much to do. I mean, I have to be honest, I don't really remember Riker too much from watching the last two seasons, you know, when they were on.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to feel like maybe they've, you know, especially after Best of Both Worlds, they resolved his arc, and so, you know, while he has the occasional episode, he's not a huge presence on at this point in the show.
Yeah, well, and also I think if this had been a television show on nowadays, I think he would have left after Best of Both Worlds.
Sure.
As well, you know.
And, you know, there's less at this point, there's less. He doesn't have any gimmicks, really.
No, not really.
Yeah.
Also Worf teaches space calisthenics, which I just appreciated.
Space Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Aww.
I will give this episode 5 crazy rocks.
Well, this still gets 0 crazy rocks from me.
Really? You thought it was that bad?
I really just...
You think this is alternative factor empath bad? I mean, come on.
0.5, okay? 0.5.
Oh, all right. That is allowable.
No, this is if we ever have to at the end of the... If at the end of this, we're going to be making like a list of like our least favorite Star Trek episodes, this is going to be on it.
Not mine.
Well, you're allowed.
I know. We're going to have arguments about it.
Yay!
Well, let's move on and talk about an episode that is not bad. Relics. What did you think of Relics?
You know, this was one of those total fan service episodes, and I just fucking loved it.
Does that mean you're a fan?
It means I might not be.
I mean, I think that that's been kind of coming. We've been sort of edging to that for a while.
Yeah.
I just said coming and edging, ew. but yeah, I think the fact that you appreciate this episode as much as I think you do is indicative of something.
I love Scotty, okay? Scotty is one of my favorites from the original series, and it's... I like James Doohan. It's, you know, sad that he's no longer with us, and this was just a very... I don't know. This was a nice episode, and it was a good episode, and it was... It did... I mean, we talked about, you know, when Spock appeared in Reunification, and whether or not that was a gimmick, and, you know...
Sorry, I just laugh because every time Richard... He mentions that episode a lot, and I have not corrected him because it's really not that important, but it's not called Reunification.
What is it called?
It's called Unification.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't it be called Reunification? Because they were unified, and then they ununified, and now they're going to reunify.
That's a good question, and they keep calling it Reunification in the episode. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, well...
Let's keep talking about Re-Relics.
So in Re-Relics, you have Riscotti, and this one felt like it did, there was a reason for, I don't know, this one felt a lot more meaningful than Unification does. And I guess, I really like...
Well, because they actually had I think it's that they came up with a good story.
Yeah.
I think it's frankly it. I mean, you know, if you want to bring Spock back, I think, you know... There was no gimmick involved here, and I think that's a large part of it. I mean, you know, when we talked about Unification, you know, we talked about the fact that it was coming out around the same time as the last original series movie, The Undiscovered Country, and so they wanted to bring Spock in, and it was this whole big thing, and they made a big deal about it. I'm sure that they made a fairly large deal about having Scotty on the show as well, but... It feels like a smaller episode because it is a smaller episode. It's not a two-parter. It's actually a very, very interesting and personal story.
Yeah.
But it's not really about Scotty necessarily. And so it feels like everyone involved in this episode really, really approached it with care and love in a way that I didn't feel with Unification.
Well, they managed to... By and large, the episode is about, again, it's about retirement, it's about growing older, it's about a part in life that everybody gets to, which is when they feel that their time has passed.
And nostalgia, too.
Yeah. Everyone goes back at some point to, you know, your old college or your old hometown, and you feel like, why am I here? You know, like, everyone has a point when they feel that they've moved on and they don't really have a direction. And none of the main characters can really support that theme right now. Picard is in his prime. He's not going to have a thing about worrying about retirement for a while.
Yeah.
Riker's really, you know, no one's really at that point.
Right.
And so, in a way, bringing back a beloved original series character who would be the most out of place? I mean, Kirk could learn the politics, and he's still a leader, you know? Anybody could do anything except, you know, Spock, as we see, has been working this entire time. Scotty is the one who, as the technical person, whose knowledge is going to be the most out of date if he's pulled back suddenly.
Yeah, and he even says as much in the episode where he says, look, I'm not going to try and learn years of technical advancements. I think, you know, and I think using Scotty, I'm not really sure how they hit upon using Scotty. I think that, you know, there's a lot of other characters that they could have used, of course. I mean, there's Chekhov, there's Uhura, there's Sulu. I mean, Kirk. I mean, they could have used Kirk if they really wanted to. And I also think it's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything for you, but, you know, I don't think it's a surprise at this point in the show's run to say this, but Kirk never appears in the show.
Yeah, I know he does the movie, right?
I don't know, does he? and I don't think that I'm glad they never used Kirk in the show because I don't think that Shatner would have been good on the show, frankly. And I don't know that there's a story that they could have given Kirk that I think having Kirk would have been even more of a bombastic sort of, we need to make this a big episode and a big splash than having Spock in it. And I don't think they would have done a good job with it, frankly.
Yeah.
I think having Scotty be the character in this episode gives it lower stakes because no one is really expecting that much from it. you know, certainly he's an interesting character, but he's not someone that he was always sort of on the sidelines. Yeah. You know, I mean, he had a couple of episodes that were sort of his episodes in the original series. But, you know, at this point, this version of Scotty in the movies was always sort of on the sidelines, and he had his funny moments and things like
that. He does well as kind of a comic relief side character. Yeah. As somebody who, I mean, it almost reminds me of his own principle, which he starts talking about, where, you know, you always tell him it's going to be longer than it'll actually take. Well, Scotty has fewer scenes, but he is awesome in almost all of them. And so, like, there are no bad Scotty episodes because he had so few episodes in a way.
Are you forgetting about Wolf in the Fold?
Yes. Obviously.
Where people thought he was Jack the Ripper. I remember you not liking that one. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's the way that they bring him back, I think, is inspired because, of course, McCoy appeared in Encounter at Farpoint as a 130-year-old admiral, whatever the hell he was supposed to be, and that was all right. But I don't think that you could hinge an entire episode on that character. I'm not really interested in seeing DeForest Kelly in old man makeup tottering around for 45 minutes.
And, I mean, he's supposed to be older than McCoy anyway, right? Chronologically? I thought at least actor-wise he was older. But anyway,
DeForest Kelly, I believe, was older than the rest of them, but only by a few years.
Okay, I didn't know if that was.
And when he died in 1999. I don't think that he was that old.
He was sick.
He was
right?
Like in his 70s. Yeah, he was sick. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I mean, frankly, I think it's astonishing that the bulk of the original series actors are still alive. I mean,
it's going to be soon.
They're going to start dropping soon.
Oh, God.
And I think once they start going, they're all going to start going because, you know,
well, again, just the ages. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I say that, but of course, DeForest Kelly died in 1999 and James Doohan died in, I think, 2005. And no one else has died in like 10 years. But, you know, Nichelle Nichols is quite old. Shatner is quite old. Nimoy is quite old and has COPD. He's not doing well. What's his name? Chekhov. Walter Koenig is looking kind of frail. I think,
Richard, this is a very depressing conversation.
George Takei is I think pretty good, but he's also quite up there.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, they're going to start going, I think. Shatner, I think, I don't know why he's still alive. Spite and steroids, I think.
I didn't realize he was quite that old.
Shatner?
But honestly, I don't know.
Shatner's like 85 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, he's up there.
I knew he was old, but.
Yeah, he's quite, I mean, they're all quite old at this point. But anyway, that's a side issue. You know, so I think that, you know, it's not interesting to see an old McCoy tottering around the ship. We already had Spock, and that was kind of a. So I think using Scotty and bringing him back, not in his prime, but in his prime enough that he's able to sort of get around and act like a, you know, in a fish out of water and all these kind of things. That's always interesting. And that's always a good plot.
The implication is that if he had been revived within a month or two of the original thing, he would still like the fact that he rigged this weird, you know, thing that even 75 years later, people are amazed that you can do.
Yeah. And it's completely in character. We know Scotty can do stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, that says that, you know, again, at the moment he was frozen with that technology, he was still as awesome as he was. And we see him.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be, what, like 60 maybe? I mean, he's not old, certainly. I mean, especially in a universe where people live to be 120, 130 years old. He's got plenty of life in him, you know? And I think, you know, it's just nice that they were able to get, I mean, it obviously, I mean, like you said, this, a lot of it is a fan service episode, but I think the episode would work even if you didn't know who Scotty was, because I think that the characters don't really treat him with a lot of reverence, which I think is interesting.
All they treat him is he was the chief engineer on, you know, another of the Federation flagships. He was, when he was younger, he was Geordi, but now it's 75 years later and he's old and out of touch.
Yeah.
You know, again, the episode is about that. The fact that this is, you know, just as Sarek was about somebody who is, you know, succumbing to a terminal disease, you know, who was once in the prime of his life is, you know, the fact that it is a character that we know very well at this point.
Yeah.
Twists the knife, makes it more poignant, makes us feel it more. But that said, the episode shows us that the situation itself is, you know, it's about the situation itself in a way.
Yeah.
And using that to, again, the metaphor for this is going to happen to us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk some more about the actual episode, but I think that I do want to geek out a bit about the actual, like, behind the scenes stuff, because, you know, and I don't know, it's the show, you know, they had this longstanding policy on The Next Generation about not mentioning or having original series characters, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, they broke that in the first episode because I think they wanted to sort of have a baton passing of the torch, I guess is the better phrase. But they really were against it for a long time, and they even had in the sort of writer's Bible that, you know, we don't want to see stories about the original series characters. We don't want to have them in the show. Like, we need this to stand on its own. And, you know, I mentioned all the way back in when we were talking about Sarek in the third season, you know, they really had to fight to have him even mention the name Spock. They were very hesitant about bringing stuff in from the original series. And of course, as the show became such a success and as the show got such critical acclaim and got where it is today, they obviously got more and more comfortable with that and sort of broke the rules. And so they had Spock and unification, these kind of things.
Earlier on, yes, it would be just one of those very cheesy spin-off, like, oh, it's the cast of the original Enterprise and their visit, you know. It would be a very obvious ratings grab, you know. If they did this episode, if they did unification in season 2, it would be a very obvious, they're struggling and they're hoping people will see, you know,
they're tune desperate
to seeing Scotty this week. But now, yeah, the show is, it's very much its own entity, and it's not, you know, you say a baton twirling, but here is the show's, here is the show existing at the same level as original series. And in a way, this show, this episode is dealing with the fact that at this point, Next Generation has double the amount of episodes as original series and is frankly a much better watched show, a much more acclaimed show in a way. Like,
yeah,
this show is about your, you know, this particular episode is about, you know, your kids surpassed you and how do you deal with that? And are you still relevant if, you know, the next generation has, you know, has passed you that much?
I think it's interesting that you take that read on it, because I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, okay. I think that, you know, it's obvious to me that, you know, as they showed Spock and as they showed Sarek, you know, certainly these were characters from the original series, but they did not go balls to the walls with references, with sound effects.
They
showed the bridge of the Enterprise in this
episode. And I mean, oh my God, that moment. You know,
this is a love letter to the original series. I mean, this is...
Well, the episode didn't... Yeah.
And this is an episode that I think everybody involved working on it must have really loved the original series. I was reading on Memory Alpha, like, they put in a lot of unpaid hours, like, getting everything right. You know, there are references to original series episodes. There's callbacks. I mean, Data's line about it's green is from an episode with Scott when he gives, forget what episode it is, but he's like drinking with someone and he has some green stuff, so that happens. You know, they show the bridge of the Enterprise for Christ's sake. I mean so to me it's like, this is really the episode where they were able to just geek out and just say, this is how much we love the original series. You know, we're in the sixth season, we know that we are Star Trek now, and we are the only Star Trek, because of course the Undiscovered Country had come out a year earlier and that was the last original series movie, so they knew that this was it for them. So they knew that they were it, and I think that this was them saying, no, we're going to just show you how much we love the original series.
But in a way, that doesn't contradict that, because the episode does go in a, even, you know, because Scotty does think he's irrelevant, and maybe in some ways, and at the beginning, he is a little irrelevant, but the episode does firmly decide that, you know, that doesn't, you know, being old, being a little outdated isn't irrelevant. And there is still a, you know, because Scotty does save the day at the end, and he does go on his own adventures at the end. And so it's saying, you know, something like, things don't outdate in that way.
Well, yeah. And I think that's good, but I would take that a step further and say that, you know, you're only outdated if you think you're outdated.
Whether
or not Scotty is going to change his mind and, you know, study technical manuals and, you know, do all these kind of things to get back into shape and, you know, rejoin Starfleet or whatever, reactivate himself and go, you know, be a chief engineer again. Will that happen? I don't know.
I think he's going to have more of a lazy, you know, just doing whatever the hell he wants. But he is at the point when he realized, like, if I just want to bum around from place to place and, you know, see how the galaxy's changed in the past 75 years, you know, He can do that, and he doesn't have to, you know, if he's not going to be, if he's not able to be the chief engineer on the flagship on the Enterprise, which he can't anymore.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. He can still do things.
Yeah, that's a thing.
And I don't mean that in the condescending way it came out. Like,
No, I don't think that sounded condescending at all. And I think you're right. And I think that, you know, the very end of the episode when it's such a nice moment and they give him the shuttlecraft and, you know, he's able to just go out and do what he wants to do. And, you know, he explicitly says, well, I'm not going to go to the retirement planet now. I'm going to go do something else. And, you know, everyone is there to say goodbye to him. And watching that scene, it's very obvious to me that it's not the character saying goodbye to Scotty. It's the actors, you know, who must love James Doohan, and they're just,
oh my God,
you know, you can see that. And so it's this kind of thing where, you know, it's so hard to talk about objectively because, you know, Scotty is such a beloved character and the episode is so good. And the episode is just such a blow to the heart if you love Star Trek. And it's sending him off. But it's sending him off on his own terms and sending him off in a way that makes it clear that this is not the end of his story.
Yeah, there's going to be I'm sure there's tons of fan fiction about the adventures of Scotty after this episode.
Well, not even fan fiction, but.
Oh, is there a series of books about the new Scotty adventures?
I mean, I don't know if there was a series of books, but he appeared in a couple of them. Mm. And we'll just leave it at that. I have some problems with the Star Trek novels. I will just say that there's not a lot of restraint there a lot of times.
Kirk, well, now I want to read them.
Kirk and Spock's parents meet and they decide to go into the I mean, it's like shit like that. I mean, that doesn't actually happen, but you know. And so I think that I'm trying to decide where to go.
Here's something that I don't know how much I have to say to this, but I'm thinking about the conversation when they're on the bridge of the Enterprise, Picard and Scotty. And once, you know, Scotty's been just kind of drifting and finally now Picard is time, you know. And they're talking and, you know, Scotty's saying, oh, you know, I always remembered this. Like, it was my first love. Like, this was the first ship I really, you know, felt that for, you know. And, you know, and Picard says, yeah, I know how you feel, and he starts talking about the Stargazer.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting in a way that's, you know, in a way we've seen, you know, while this is Picard's show and this is Picard's story, and we think about Picard, we think of him on the Enterprise, he thinks of himself as still the captain of the Stargazer in a way. And I think that's interesting.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, it's because when you're up against the wall and you don't have a lot of resources, you remember those days.
Well, that was it. That was when he was scrappy and young, and in a way,
I mean, not even that young. I mean, I think the Stargazer was his command right before the Enterprise, so he was probably in his 40s or 50s. But
yeah,
you know, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, like it wasn't the flagship of the Enterprise. He was just maybe a notable captain, a more talented captain because of who he was, but at the same time, like.
Well, and I think certainly, I mean, I don't think that they give you the flagship of
Starfleet
if you're not a
he was a captain as any other was at when he was the captain of the Stargazer. In a way, I mean, we've said this, we've noticed many times, and that as the captain of the flagship, Picard has more of a representational role than he might have as the Stargazer.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so, like, again, there's those things. He had further to go when he was in the Stargazer. Like, he was young and hungry.
I think that, you know, I don't mean to cut you off, but it makes me realize that, you know, one of the things that's very different about the original series from the Next Generation is that, you know, the Enterprise, the Kirk's Enterprise is not the flagship.
Yeah.
That's just one ship of many. And, you know, that was a scrappier ship. You know, we know that it was sort of like, you know, overpowered and, you know, overworked and underpowered or, you know, whatever you want to say. And it was a different era, you know, it was a more dangerous era. It was a larger galaxy in a sense. And now we've talked a lot about the Next Generation universe being more settled and all of these things. And so, you know, having Picard talk about his days on the Stargazer is something that he really thinks fondly back to and sort of like his salad days in a way.
Yeah.
I think kind of is supposed to be some sort of analogy to or parallelism to Kirk and his ship, you know. And so the Enterprise that Scotty is on in this episode, the Enterprise D, is a very different ship technologically, but that's, he could learn that. What's really different about it is its role and its sort of culture.
Yeah, the first thing he notices is that, like, you know, his cabin, he says it's gigantic, you know, it's, he's thinking of, he's reminded of like a luxury hotel he stayed at, you know, and we know how Spartan the Enterprise was.
Right.
The original
right.
Enterprise.
And so you can kind of get the sense that the Stargazer must have been kind of like that as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was a much smaller ship. It was not as nice. It was perhaps, you know, just, Picard even says as much, we're sort of flying apart at the seams sometimes. And so that's what I think is interesting, is that it's Picard sort of, you know, maybe it's not even true. You know, maybe Picard is just giving Scotty a line to make him feel better. We don't know, you know. Because the one thing that I think this episode really makes clear and sort of revisits is the idea that Picard is really an astute reader of people.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about LaForge and stuff as well. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he might just be feeding him a line to make him feel more comfortable.
But let's also face that, you know, while Picard, again, is still in his prime, retirement isn't, you know, like for Riker, retirement isn't even on the horizon.
No.
You know. For Picard, while it's going to be a long time before he has to worry, he kind of knows that he's in the he'll probably be an admiral at some point.
Right.
You know, he'll be given a desk job, he'll be given some things, and then he'll retire and he'll go to ceremonies. Like, he knows that that's the, you know, maybe he'll teach at the academy. Like, that's kind of where Picard sees his next few stages, and he knows he can maybe, if he doesn't feel that way, he can imagine how it's going to feel.
And I think, I think that he's also able to imagine how Scotty feels, because of course he sort of nicely dresses down LaForge a little bit, you know, as well. I mean, you know, I should transition into talking about LaForge, if that's okay, because, you know, I think that the LaForge Scotty relationship in the episode as it develops is really nice. And, you know, LaForge is allowed to be a jerk in this episode.
Yeah, but in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, and that nobody, because let's face it, you know, Scotty is just kind of talking. Scotty is being an old man who's talking.
He's
everyone's
kind of a doddering old man.
With, you know, stories that go nowhere.
Right.
And he's like, he keeps saying, like, oh my God, this is, he's panicking at everything that's supposed to be that way. He is in the way.
That's what I think that's really good, and I think that's what I like about the episode, is that it does allow Scotty to be a little annoying.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's very hard to do, because of course if you're watching this episode and LaForge is snapping at Scotty, there's a real problem there that the audience could turn on LaForge, because God, he's being mean to Scotty. I mean, how could he do that? You know, but
they're also making it clear that there's a really big mystery that Scotty's messing things up, and that while Scotty may be awesome to go and have a beer with, and you know when Picard and Scotty are having a drink, and you know it's a wonderful conversation, and you know we like both, and you know, but yeah, when you're in the middle of working, you don't have time for this, you know. He needs some babysitting right now, and I think they recognize that.
And I think that works, because again, it's Scotty.
Yeah.
You know, if this was Kirk, there's no way that these people would be acting like this. You know Scotty was the chief engineer of the Enterprise. Okay, great.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
he's not famous. You know, he's probably not taught in the academy. Nobody really knows who he is. You know, I mean, certainly they're sort of like, oh, okay, you're, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, in a way, this episode reminds me of that awful one where the people from the 80s were cryogenically frozen. But in a way, he is that. And I just remember, you know, where they're treating them as like, well, they're living history, you know, and all of that. I mean, one of the first things Picard says to Scotty when he first meets him is, oh, you know, we can learn a lot about your time from just talking to you, like, which is, you know,
kind of,
it's a very, inadvertently condescending thing.
Yeah,
like,
it's kind of mean.
You're not a person, you're a history exhibit.
Right.
You're a curiosity.
Right.
And
I mean, they very quickly shun him off to quarters and nobody really checks on him.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
Like I said, you know, and that was, you know, I was watching, I'm like, why don't they give him to Troy? He's going to be, you know, why doesn't he hang out with Data for a while? He'll find Data endlessly fascinating. Why don't they give him a, you know, like...
Well, that's the thing I like about it, is that he's allowed to be at loose ends. And he's allowed to sort of just, like, wander around the ship and not really know what to do.
But again,
he ends up in 10 forward, and of course, then that sort of starts the drinking thing with Picard.
Yeah, and then the episode goes.
You know, and then the episode sort of goes, but... I like that the show just allows him to sort of wander around for a little while.
And it also does help him quickly realize what he is at that point quickly enough. Again, once he has the conversation with Picard, he realizes, no, like, I am being an annoying out-of-the-way old man. You know, right, this isn't really working. Right. But then, you know, maybe this is a good way to transition into Geordi, because Geordi's seen when he's saying, like, well, the ship still works and it holds. Like, it's a very clumsy speech. But I think they have Scotty realize that and realize what LaForge is doing.
Well, right. And I think it's true to who Geordi is and who the character of LaForge as he's developed, because he's not good with people.
No.
And he is kind of inherently dorky.
Yeah.
I don't think he's mean, but we've certainly... When LaForge has shit to do, he doesn't like to be bothered.
And well, that's it. He's,
these are all... These are all character beats that have been developed for him, and they all sort of come together in this episode.
Yeah. I guess that's good. This is an episode that knows Geordi very well and knows Scotty very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think they have, you know, Scotty also probably knows LaForge's... If Scotty and LaForge are very different, Scotty's met hundreds of engineers like LaForge in his day, people who do really just are better with computers than people and do just want to, you know... Scotty's a good time guy. He's a mechanical genius, but he loves people. He loves to be in a bar drinking and having a good time, you know. LaForge does not.
And that's the thing. It's nothing personal, though. No. You know, LaForge is just not good with people. And once Picard sort of like knocks on his head a little bit and is like, hey, you know, I don't want to tell you what to do, but maybe you should do this.
The two of them kind of come to an understanding and realize, like, I've been annoying the hell out of you. I've been kind of disrespectful. And all right, let's start over. And then, you know, from that point, they do learn to work together. Which is, you know, and let's face it. You know that's exactly where the episode's gonna go. The second they start to have an argument, you know, they're gonna put their heads together and solve whatever the problem is, and you know. But it's still nice to see.
And yeah, and I don't think that that's a problem. I think that that's what you want to see happen. You know, this is not an episode where you want the unexpected to happen, you know?
For a horrible second, I thought that Scotty was going to end up having to sacrifice himself for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And
I don't think there was any way they would have done that.
No, like when you say, oh, we got to destroy the ship, I was like, oh, God, don't make him have to, you know. But you know, and they fortunately didn't make that choice. And then that scene ended up being... I mean, let's say so. The plot of the episode, you know, with this Dyson sphere doll, it was, again, Star Trek doing a plot that doesn't really matter, but is just pretty cool. It had a really exciting scene at the end, you know? It had a really last-minute rescue, you know? A tiny ship had to save the Enterprise, you know? They're holding the doors open with the shield. Like, that's cool to watch.
No, yeah, it is. It's great. And I you know... I like the Dyson sphere a lot, and I like the sort of mystery of it, and I like how it looks, you know, I mean, it's all very, very good. And I think that, you know, it's an appropriately massively sized B plot for this episode, because I think that you know, they say something like it's, I don't know, 4 million Earths or something. I mean,
it was like the orbit of the Earth around the sun.
It's immense. I mean, this thing is immense. I mean, it's like something like 250 million class M planets or something. I mean, it's a huge thing. And so, you know, and of course that's a little difficult to get off on this kind of scale, on this kind of budget, but I think that you just kind of have to go with it. And of course, you know, you think about it and you think about the size of the Enterprise. We know how big the Enterprise is. And then you see the door and it's like the door dwarfs the Enterprise.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, this thing is pretty big.
But that's one of the cool things about Star Trek is that they're going around and seeing weird shit that they've never seen before.
But that's, you know, and that's what I like about it is, you know, it's something that I think works in the episode because it is Scotty and it is such sort of a momentous event for the fans. And then I think also as well, you know, there's sort of a metaphor level of this as well, because the Dyson sphere is this sort of like thing, which this mythical thing, which they never thought they would see in the same way that Scotty is outside of time. And then at the end of the episode, it's revealed that the Dyson sphere has been abandoned.
Yeah. You know, the sun grew too old and they had to abandon it in a way. Yeah, that's one of the relics of the title, but yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, does relics refer to Scotty or does relics refer to the Dyson sphere?
But I mean, at the same time, you know, at the end, where does what happens to the Dyson Sphere at the end? They're sending Federation teams to study it, where they will learn a lot. So let's face it, even an abandoned Dyson Sphere is still really useful to people today.
Finally, I think the Enterprise. I mean, just the seeing the bridge again. I mean,
you start off
at the beginning where they bring him, you know, they activate the transporter and Scotty appears. And number one, I don't know if Netflix spoiled that. I really hope it didn't.
It did.
Really?
Yeah.
What did it say?
So when you like load a, you know, new video, when you load an episode from Netflix, it says a still. And the still is a big old picture of Scotty.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. But no, like, because number one, like, I saw it just as I was watching, like, right as I was watching the episode. So, like, it made me really excited to suddenly watch it. Because, hell, after watching Man of the People, I wasn't really looking forward to watching Relics. And that actually made me really excited to watch the episode.
Yeah, it was a little background information. So, Richard watched Man, like, we record on Sundays usually. And Richard watched Man of the People, like, on Wednesday, I think, or something like
that. Thursday or Friday.
It was early. And then, you know, I was like, hey, have you watched Relics yet? And he's like, eh, I'll get to it. And it's like Saturday night. He hasn't watched. He's like, oh, I'll watch it.
Yeah, you're like, what? Have you watched it? I'm like, yes, I'm going to watch it right now. And I like went to bed like 20 minutes later. I'm like, I'm not doing this.
He didn't pick up my hints that he really should watch Relics. Because if I ask about that, it's usually for a reason. So hello.
Hello.
Don't criticize our audience because you're not that smart either.
I never said I would listen. The reason they listen to us is because they can finally listen to me and say, wow, that guy is smart. And, you know, that's why I've cultivated the audience that we have.
But, you know, so you start off and you have Scotty appearing and you have the old transporter sound effect, which is great. And you have the old transporter sparkle, which is great. And does it make sense? I don't know. But it's just fun. And then you get the actual bridge of the Enterprise. And
yeah.
It's so nice to see it.
It was.
And it's just, you know, there's the love and the care and the sort of like attention to detail that they put into this episode. It really does make it feel like this is the episode that kind of says, okay, you know what? We are just going to write a love letter to the original series in a way. And it's great. I love it. It's just nice to see that kind of stuff again. I mean, you can watch the old episodes, but you know, when you get to see it appear like that again in
there
another
is
series,
something it's fairly, I mean, we talked a bit when we finished it of, you know, whether I thought does, you know, the original series, did it justify the love and the franchise and everything that's come after it? And I think I said I wasn't quite sure because it felt very uneven. But this is, I don't know, this episode does make it clear how much the original series and Star Trek in general is more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
By, I don't know, the fact that this felt much more, this wasn't a gimmick episode. This wasn't a cheesy episode. This wasn't a poorly done episode. This wasn't a cash-in episode. This wasn't, as you said, it was a love letter episode. And in a way, this episode kind of says whether or not original series, quote unquote, deserved the love it gets, you know, whatever, it gets that. And it's really, and when it's working, when Star Trek is doing something well, this is what happens. And
yeah, because I think that, you know, the whole sort of, you know, ethos of Trek About is, you know, and sort of my philosophy behind the show and why I wanted to do it in the first place is that I think a lot of people discount Star Trek because they've seen an episode here or there and it's not very good. And what I think is important to really get home is, you know, Star Trek is more than the sum of its parts, and you have to go on a journey like you're going on to
where no man has gone before.
Yeah, to really, I think, get into the ebbs and flows and the rhythms of the franchise. And, you know, if you're just going to get into Star Trek and just sit down and watch an episode here, an episode there, I don't know that you can do it. You know, Star Trek is something that is bigger than what it actually is. You know, I mean, the original series is what it is. The Next Generation is what it is. The movies are what they are. But, you know, if you sort of sit down every week and you watch a couple episodes and you listen to this podcast, I think that what you get is, you know, I obviously, I mean, Star Trek is probably one of the more important things in my life, and it's always been there for me. And so that's why I want to do this show, is because I want to get across to people that this is something that's really important, and this is something that is meaningful to a lot of people. And this is kind of like the encapsulation of that, I think. Relics is like the Next Generation, its clearest example of this is what people love about this in one 45-minute episode.
So what you're saying is that if you want to get into Star Trek, you have to spend several years watching every single thing in chronological order?
I think so.
Well, folks, if you're going to do that, good luck, because I'm involved in that, and let me tell you, it's fun.
You're liking it.
I'm having such a great time. Help.
Don't be insincere.
Do you know why I started the show with you? Because you held a gun to my head and you said, I'm doing a new podcast, fucker.
I don't own a gun. It's a phaser.
What do we got next week?
10. Wait a second.
Oh.
10.
Tyson spheres?
Tyson spheres.
10 pieces of Tyson's chicken.
So before we talk about what we're going to be watching next week, as usual, if you would like to share your thoughts about this episode, please do so on the post at trekaboutshow.com. Leave us a comment. Follow us on Twitter, trekaboutshow. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekaboutshow. And finally, leave us an iTunes review. We've gotten a few really good ones.
We read everything you send us.
We would like to get some more. We were running a contest a couple weeks ago for the best iTunes review.
Are
and
we
I think,
really?
I think that is over. And also,
no, it's not. We still need more entries.
Well, also, we do need more entries, but also I realize that we have no way of contacting.
They don't need to know them. That, Eric. They don't need to know that. We're trying. This is what we call a scam, Eric.
No, it's not a scam, because I was about to say that if you have not visited our webpage in a while and you have left us an iTunes review, leave a comment and let us know how to get in touch with you, because let's say once we get to 500 iTunes reviews,
okay, $5 gift certificate to Crayola crayons,
we will pick a winner and we will give you something impressive,
one of those like three-piece highlighters.
And I will just say that one of the iTunes reviews wanted shirtless pics of us,
okay,
which they will not be getting.
Why not? I could do it.
You'll get a shirtless pic of Richard.
Hey.
So next week we are talking about schisms. And true. You know what's coming.
Oh, no. No. Don't you fucking say it. No. No. No.
Cue.
No.